All right. Well, let me start by saying that questions are good. The biggest misconception you have is that when you have faith, that you just have to have faith to believe and that's it. And you're not allowed to have any questions. You're not allowed to have any doubts along the way. That's a big misconception. And I think it doesn't help us in the Christian walk if we shut people down when they have questions and say, you must just believe. Okay. But for the people that are sitting here today that maybe came as a guest or as a friend or sitting here and maybe you don't believe, maybe you consider yourself, hey, I'm a non-believer, I don't believe in all this. Well, let me ask you a question. If Christianity is true, would you become a Christian? See, if the answer is no, is that rational or reasonable? To choose not to believe something that's true? The thing is, I've met a lot of people that don't want to believe that God exists. They don't want to believe that there's a sovereign God, because if there's no sovereign God, then they can be God of their life. Hey, I get that. I would like to be too. I mean, being a Christian can be inconvenient sometimes. But see, what I've discovered is that majority of people are not on a truth quest. They're on a happiness quest. And see, God doesn't always fit in the mold of what makes you happy. When it comes down to belief, a lot of the time with people, it's not that they don't believe here. It's the problem is here. They don't want it to be true. But what I'm going to show you today is just more evidence, right? Evidence can help you, because there are going to be days where you doubt. And even if you're a strong Christian believer, I mean, how many people in here can say, honestly, there's been days where you doubt what you believe is true? Raise your hand. I'm glad it's not just me, okay? I mean, for sure there's days that you doubt what you believe. I mean, some days I wake up, I think I'm an atheist. Until I smell the coffee, and then I'm like, there must be a God. Of course, I'm joking, people. But the thing is, when you have actual evidence to look at, it will help your doubts. The evidence for Christianity is so overwhelming and so incredible that the more you see of it, it'll help the days when you have doubts. It'll help you doubt your doubts. Because even when you're, the thing is, the evidence doesn't change. What changes is me. I'm an emotional being, and my doubts are emotional, not intellectual. So there's a day where I wake up and I'm like, man, it's a good day. Everything's going well. God is on the throne. The next week, I'm having a bad week. I get fired. My relationship falls apart. Is there even a God? Good day, God is on the throne. Bad day, I don't even know. Okay, so what happens on those days where you have emotional doubts, you can say, you know what? But the evidence says. So that's what I want to help you today. I want to give you some evidence so that you can doubt your doubts. Do you ever doubt your doubts? I doubt it. Anyway. Listen, you don't have to have blind faith to be a Christian. So my title today is Christianity True? It can be answered by these questions. Number one, is there a God? And number two, are miracles possible? So can we show that God exists? What I'm going to do is I'm going to use Dr. Frank Turek's arguments for a theistic God. I'm only going to focus on three of them. The three arguments for a theistic God is, number one is the beginning. This is the cosmological argument that says if there was a beginning, then there had to be a beginner. Pretty simple. The second argument is the argument of design. Same thing. It says that if there is intelligent design in the universe or intelligent design in life, like you, then there had to be a designer. The third, and there's lots of scientific evidence behind those two arguments. Obviously, I have a short amount of time today. I'm going to speak very fast, and I'm going to give you as much evidence as I can, okay? So you're just going to have to take a deep breath, hold on, and take your notes later. Listen to it again later. The third argument has no science behind it. It is the argument, though, that we've known since we were children. It's more of a philosophical argument, is the argument from morality. This is the argument that says, if there is a moral law on our hearts or on our conscience that's universal, then there must be a moral law giver. The last part we will look at is, are miracles possible? Why is this important? Because the entire Christian faith is wrapped up in one miracle, the resurrection of Jesus. If it didn't exist, none of this is true. So, we'll start with the beginning, the arguments for the theistic God. We'll start with the cosmological argument. Now, this is the argument that many say points back to the Big Bang. Good, you're so cooperative this morning. The Big Bang. Now, I know some of you sitting here, you're like, Cindy, we're believers. We don't believe in the Big Bang. Well, I do. I believe that God said it and bang, it happened. Listen, the evidence for the Big Bang is so good that the top scientists all admit it. Stephen Hawking, who was the top physicist who passed away last year, he even said this. Almost everyone now believes that the universe and time itself had a beginning at the Big Bang. That space, matter, and time literally began out of nothing. There was nothing, then suddenly there was space, matter, and time all at the same time. Now, the Bible backs this up. There's many scriptures in the Bible, but I'm just going to use one here that you might not be familiar with, and that is 2 Timothy 1, verse 9. And it says, This grace was given us in Christ Jesus before the beginning of time. That statement says there was a beginning of time and that there was a before the beginning of time. To quote Stephen Hawking again, talking about the universe, he says, if the expansion rate of the universe was different by one part in 1,000,000,000,000 a second after the Big Bang, the universe would have collapsed back on itself or never developed galaxies. What is he saying? He's saying that when it began with extreme precision. Everything that it started with was perfect when it began. Another quote, if the gravitational force were altered more than one part in 10 to the 40th power, the sun would not exist and the moon would crash into the earth or shear off into space. Folks, what we're talking about here is extreme precision in the universe. That when the universe came into being, everything as we know it, gravity, the air you're able to breathe, the distance from the sun so we could survive, everything needed to sustain our life and our well-being happened instantly. You cannot use the argument of evolution in this moment because it did not evolve into the perfect place. It began perfect. It didn't evolve with the perfect gravitational force or the perfect place around from the sun. No, it all started perfectly. So, if the universe had a beginning, then it must have a beginner. The evidence leaves us with two options. Number one, no one created something out of nothing in a fine-tuned way. This is the atheistic view. The second view is, someone created something out of nothing in a fine-tuned way. Theistic view. Which one do you think seems more reasonable? Interactive part of the audience. There we go. Number two. Number two, folks. Someone creating something out of nothing in a fine-tuned way. That's a miracle. The only difference is that has a miracle worker behind it. So number one, also a miracle. Something created out of nothing. Only difference is that one has no miracle worker. Now, which is more reasonable? It's clear by this that even atheists believe in miracles. It's actually true that every single human being on the planet Earth believes in at least one miracle. How it all started. Just which more miracle is easier to believe? That the entire universe could have popped out of nothing, by nothing, and without a cause. I mean, be honest, how many of you right now are very worried that a hippopotamus is going to walk through the doors? Or that a black mamba snake is going to suddenly appear in your handbag? None of you. Why? Because things don't happen that way. It's called the law of causality. The law of causality doesn't say that everything has a cause. It says that everything that comes to be has a cause. So there has to be an uncaused first cause, or as Aristotle says, the unmoved mover. There has to be a being out there that has always existed, that is eternal. The Bible calls this being the great I am, the being that had no beginning and will have no end. But see, everything else that comes into existence has a cause. Things don't just pop out of existence by nothing, for nothing, and without a cause. Yet atheists believe that the whole universe could happen that way. If the breathtaking, precise universe could pop out of nothing, appear out of nothing, by nothing, without a cause, why doesn't everything else do so? Why don't iPhones just suddenly appear in your lap? It would have saved us all a lot of money. Why doesn't a Tesla just suddenly pop out of nothing, by nothing, without a cause right here in the church? Because things don't happen that way. So why would anybody believe that the entire universe, in all of its precision, could pop into existence by nothing, for nothing, and without a cause? Almost everyone believes that the universe and time itself had a beginning. Then if space, matter, and time all had a beginning, whatever created space, matter, and time cannot be made out of space, matter, and time. It had to be outside of space, matter, and time. So the being must be spaceless, timeless, immaterial, moral, we'll get to that in a minute, powerful to create the universe out of nothing, personal in order to choose to create, and intelligent to have a mind to make a choice to create. So when you think about a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, moral, powerful, personal, intelligent being, who do you think of? God. Now, does this show that this is the Christian God? No. What it shows is that this being could be the Christian God. We don't know that it's a Christian God at this point. We have to do more research. You have to look at more evidence. So we move on to the second argument, and that's the theological argument, the argument for design. This is the intelligent design argument that says if there is an intelligent design, there has to be an intelligent designer. So think back for a minute when you were a teenager. Maybe you come running down the stairs and you decide that for breakfast, you want to have alphabet cereal. Remember that alphabet cereal? So you come running down the stairs, you want to have the alphabet cereal, and as you get to the table, the box is knocked over, and the cereal is all spilled out on the table, and the cereal is in words, and there's a message, and it says, "Take out the trash, Mom." What are you going to assume? The cat did it? Or that the wind blew through and wrote that message down from you? No, you're going to say that this is intelligent design from an intelligent being, Mom. If you're walking on the beach at sunset and you see written in the sand, "Terry loves Cindy," are you going to assume that the crabs wrote it? Or that the wind, that those waves came in and created it? No, you're going to assume it's a product of a mind. Because you know from all your other past experiences that messages only come from minds. Emails, songs, HTML code, it all comes from a mind. They don't come from blind natural laws. So if you take that message, if you take out the trash, Mom, and you know that's a message, what about the message that's in every single cell in your body? The message that's in every single cell in your body, your DNA, your 40 or so trillion cells, has a message that's 3.2 billion letters long. Every letter is in the right order. How did that happen? Where did the message and the codes come from? Your DNA is a message a lot like take out the trash, mom, but a lot longer and a lot more intricate. Bill Gates, you all know who Bill Gates is. He said this, DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software ever created. So whenever there's a program, there's got to be a programmer. When you see take out the garbage, mom, that is actually evidence for an intelligent being. When you see take out the garbage, mom, you don't, on your table, you don't go, gee, I've really got it. I just can't find a natural law for this. No, that's positive evidence for mom. You know, Aristotle discovered something 2,400 years ago, and he noticed that all of nature was going in a direction. All of nature, including you and I, our bodies are going in a direction. I'm sure you can figure out what that direction is. I'll use a simple example that Dr. Frank likes to use, and he says, why does an acorn always go in the direction, if it's taken care of, why does it always go in the direction of becoming an oak tree? Why doesn't it become an elm tree or a seahorse? And you're like, well, Cindy, that's because it's programmed to do that. It's programmed to become an oak tree. Well, who programmed it? I mean, does the acorn have a mind? Is the acorn sitting there going, how do I become an oak tree? No, but if you nurse that thing, it's going to become an oak tree. So if the oak tree, if the acorn doesn't have a mind of its own, yet it goes in a direction, then there must be an external mind directing it toward an end. There has to be a director. This is what Aristotle called the unmoved mover. And that's how we can do science, because things are orderly. They go in a direction. We can figure out reliable cause and effect. Without that direction, we couldn't even do science. Science actually needed someone like God to create a universe and then keep it going in the direction it's going. So in other words, this argument of design is not a cause argument like the Big Bang way back when. No, this is a cause every single second of existence. This is like saying that God is to the universe what a band is to music. If the band were up here right now playing music, they would be creating and sustaining the music. What would happen the minute that band stopped playing? It would be over. The same thing is true with God. He creates the universe and all the natural laws that go with it, and then he sustains them. And he creates you, and he sustains you. This is why Paul can come along in the New Testament, who wrote 2/3 of the New Testament, and he can write and he can say, in him we live and move and have our being. And that God sustains all things by his powerful word. See, he creates and he sustains. There is an intelligent being behind this intelligent design. So the third argument is the argument for morality. How many of you were horrified by all of the school shootings lately? Hopefully everyone. How many of you would say that hurting babies for fun is bad? How do we know this? Why do we know this? Because our conscience tells us that's evil. That's wrong. You're not supposed to hurt a child. Do you know that this is a universal feeling? This is not an American feeling. You can go anywhere in the world, any culture, any tribe, and if you go to hurt a child, you don't want to do that. It's a universal feeling. And there's a moral law that's been written on our hearts that's universally there. The thing is, if you're of the atheistic belief and you believe we evolved and we believe we're a blob of biological matter, Why do you care when one blob of biological matter bumps into or hurts or kills another blob of biological matter? If there is no cause for you being here, no justification at the end of this life, and no reason, why do you care? A lot of people believe they're just chemicals. Then why does it matter if one chemical bumps into another? The argument I've heard behind that is people say, well, it's for the preservation of our species. It's the preservation of our life, why we don't want to hurt that. Well, if we're all about the preservation of our species, then shouldn't it be that the strongest survive? And in which case, I'm stronger than you, so I should kill you because you believe that it's about the preservation of our society, and I'm stronger, so we should definitely kill you and all the old people. Oh, we don't like that argument so much, huh? So the reason we care, and the reason everybody cares, and the reason we all know what's evil and what's good, is because we have a moral law that's written on our hearts. See, there is a standard of good that's beyond humanity. There is a standard of good, love, righteousness that is beyond us, and that is what we call the nature of God. And how do we know this? Well, if everyone knows that hurting babies for fun is bad or killing 6 million Jews is wrong, there has to be a God. Because there has to be a standard that is beyond us. There has to be a standard by which we measure good and evil. Otherwise, it's just everyone's opinion. It's just your opinion versus Hitler's opinion. If there is no higher standard of good, of morality, then it's just everyone's opinion. But see, evil doesn't exist on its own. It exists as a lack in a good thing. What do I mean? Evil is like cancer. If you take all the cancer out of a body, what have you got? A better body. But if you take all the body out of the cancer, what have you got? Nothing. Because cancer can't exist on its own. See, evil doesn't exist on its own. It exists as a lack in a good thing. So if evil exists, then good exists. If good exists, then God exists. Because that is what we mean by good is God's nature. C.S. Lewis, many would know that name. C.S. Lewis, early on in his life, was an atheist. And he saw terrible things in the First World War. And he one day had an epiphany when he gave his life to the Lord, because he wrote in his book, Mere Christianity, as an atheist, my argument against God was that the universe seemed so cruel and unjust. But how had I got this idea of just and unjust? A man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line. What was I comparing this universe with when I called it unjust? See, the straight line was the standard. That's how he knew what a crooked line looked like. How do you know what justice is if you've never seen injustice? You could say it this way. The shadows prove the sunshine. In order to have shadows, you have to have sunshine. In order to have evil, you must have good. Now, you can have sunshine without the shadows. You can have good without the evil. But you can't have shadows without the sunshine. You can't have good without, you can't have evil without the good. I know this sounds counterintuitive, but if evil exists, then God exists. Not because God is doing evil, but because God is the standard of good by which you would even know what evil was. So the fact that you know that something is wrong means that there is something right. And what we mean by right is God's nature. See, his nature, his fingerprint is on your heart, and that is what the moral law is. When an artist or a sculptor creates a sculpture, he leaves his fingerprints in the clay. When God created you, he left his fingerprints on your heart. His character, His goodness, who He is, the very fingerprint of God is goodness, and that is what is on your heart. That is your conscience, and that is the moral law. So if God doesn't exist, then you can't say the abuse of children is wrong, because that's just your opinion. But I'll ask you again, is hurting babies for fun bad? Then God exists. So now what we've done here, if our reasoning is good from these three arguments, the cosmological, the theological, and the moral arguments, is we have a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, moral, powerful, personal, intelligent creator who creates all things and sustains all things. Sounds like God, doesn't it? And we haven't even opened the Bible yet. But how do we know it's the God of the Bible? Well, for that, we have to go to the next question. My big point is, are miracles possible? Why is this important? Because God can use a miracle to tell you who the true God is. So if Moses can do miracles and Jesus can do miracles and the apostles can do miracles, then that is God using them to speak through them to say, hey, I'm God. The problem in today's culture is that people don't think miracles are possible. I mean, it's hard. I mean, even if you're a believer and you hear the Noah's Ark story, you know, Jesus, God flooding the whole earth, Noah and the Ark and the animals coming two by two. What? That is a crazy story, you know, if you be honest. What about Jonah and the whale? That's a whale of a tale. What about the resurrection of Jesus? How many people ever in here have ever seen anybody risen from the dead? Raise your hand. No one. Yet the entire Christian faith is built on believing something that none of us have ever seen. How is that rational? What is the greatest miracle in the Bible? No, not the resurrection. The greatest miracle in the Bible is in the very first verse, Genesis 1, verse 1. And He created the heavens and the earth. If that verse is true, then every other verse is at least possible. Because if this God is so powerful to create something out of nothing in a fine-tuned way, then at least the rest of it seems possible. And we've got atheists helping us, believing that the data for the first miracle is possible. They don't believe that who did it, but they believe the data is all there for the miracle. So if God created this entire amazing universe out of nothing, couldn't He then do anything He wanted within that world? Yes. So, yes, Noah's Ark is a crazy story, unless God exists. Yes, resurrections don't occur, unless God exists. Yes, Jonah and the whale is a whale of a tale, unless God exists. You know, a lot of people, I know they have a hard time believing in miracles. And when you speak to them, we're like, why don't you believe in miracles? Well, it's because I've never seen one. But that's actually not a really good reason to disbelieve something. Because there's a lot of things that you believe in that you've never seen. I mean, you believe in your mind. Have you ever seen it? Hopefully you're using it right now. You've never seen gravity. You're like, Cindy, yes, we have. We see it all the time. Nope, that's not gravity. What is that? That's the effects of gravity. That's how we know God exists. We reason from effect to cause. We see creation, there must be a creator. Creation is the effect, the creator is the cause. We have a moral law written on our hearts, that's the effect. The cause is a moral law giver. We see design in the universe and design in life. That's the effect, the cause, an intelligent being. And by the way, if miracles do occur, why should you not expect to see a lot of them? What do miracles have to be in order to get your attention? They have to be rare, right? I mean, if miracles occurred all the time, they wouldn't get our attention. They wouldn't be special acts of God. Think about it. If people rose routinely from the dead, what would that mean for the resurrection of Christ? You'd be like, hey, buddy, you know, Jesus, he died for your sins and he rose again. The guy would be like, so? Uncle Carl rose from the dead 2 weeks ago. Now I got to get the inheritance back. You guys. No, it's got to be a rare event. Or it wouldn't get our attention. The crazy thing is there's things that happen every day in this natural world that if they didn't happen all the time, we would call them miracles. I mean, if you've seen a child being born or your own child, when that child is born, the whole thing happens, you never hear anybody saying, wow, that's evolution. No, people stand there and they go, what? Well, this is a miracle. There must be an intelligent being behind this. There's got to be a God. That's what people do because it's so miraculous to see, but because it happens all the time, we dismiss it. But miracles are possible. What you need to do at this point is you have to look at the evidence for Jesus and if Jesus really rose from the dead. Now, I don't have time to go into the historical evidence. I'm going to fly through these few points. But let me tell you this, that the historical evidence for the resurrection of Jesus is so overwhelming that some of the world's renowned atheists prior, Lee Strobel, Josh McDowell, when they set out to disprove Christianity, they set out to disprove the resurrection of Christ. There was such overwhelming evidence that they became not only believers, but today are one of the top leading apologists of the faith and have written books and books on it, because that is how overwhelming the evidence is for this. But in order to continue, is there God? Is Christianity true? We have to look at the resurrection of Jesus. And again, just to briefly start, why would we even start with Jesus? Why wouldn't we start with Buddha or Muhammad? Well, because none of the other religious figures that have ever lived claim to be God. Jesus was the only one that says, I'm God, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody comes to me except through the Father. He was the only one who claimed to be God, so we start with the one who claimed to be God. So the historical evidence for the resurrection. Number one, the first one you got to look at is, did Jesus really die on the cross? Not did he die on the cross as a cross. Did he actually die when he was on the cross? There was the people that said, well, he didn't really die. He was, you know, he was severely beaten and whipped, but then he was able to get up the next morning and walk out the tomb. No New Testament scholar, Christian or atheist, no New Testament scholar concedes that, they all concede that Jesus was dead after the crucifixion, because there is no evidence, none, of anyone ever surviving a Roman crucifixion. The Journal of the American Medical Association published a scientific medical study, and here's what they said. Clearly, the weight of the evidence indicates that Jesus was dead even before the wound to his side was inflicted. So he was dead. Point number two, the second category of evidence is this, the empty tomb. The best evidence for the empty tomb is that even the opponents of Jesus conceded that the tomb was empty. They just came up with an alternative story why. When the disciples said the tomb is empty, he's risen from the dead, if the Romans had hidden the body or the Jews had hidden the body, they would have said, wait a minute, put him on a thing and paraded him around the town as dead Jesus, wouldn't they have? But they didn't have the body. The tomb was really empty. So the only thing they could do was come up with an excuse that, the disciples stole the body. Hold on a second. The disciples, after Jesus died, they did not understand the way it was going to play out. They thought Jesus was going to rise and become governor king. No, when their Messiah died, they were shaken, they were depressed, they were scared, and they were running for their lives. These puny little tiny scared disciples hiding a thing did not decide to go during the night and face the Roman guards, 12 strong Roman guards, fight them off, and then roll the stone away that weighed thousands of tons. No, it's not a plausible story. But they all agreed that the tomb was empty. So the third thing is, the third category of evidence is the eyewitnesses. Jesus appeared to over 500 people at one time when he was alive, for those 30 days or so when he walked the earth. And the Bible only refers to men at that time when they were counting. So 500 men was probably 1,000 people if you consider the women and children that were with them. He appeared separately to his disciples. He appeared separately to the apostles. He appeared to his brother. He appeared to the women. He appeared to a lot of people during that time. And there are tons of accounts of eyewitnesses that saw him resurrected. The fourth point was, what did the apostles have to gain by spreading this, our Messiah has risen and he is the Messiah? What did they have to gain? Most people are not going to die for a lie, knowing it's a lie. And remember, these were sad, depressed disciples. What made them suddenly change their tune? Most people do things, they say, most crimes are committed because they say it's either money, sex, or power. The disciples got none of this. What they got was excommunicated, beaten, whipped, and tortured to death. Hey, yeah, you want to come and join us? We've got beatings, whippings, tortures for you. It's a great religion. Come on. What did they have to gain? Number five, and this is Saul to Paul. Saul was the Jewish man who persecuted the Christians. He was incredibly well-educated, and he believed that they were wrong, and he persecuted the Christians. He killed them. He got edicts to kill them. He held the coats for the men while they stoned Stephen. Like everybody was petrified of this man, and he was going to outlaw Christianity until he had an experience on the road to Damascus where Jesus appeared to him in the bright lights. All of his people saw the bright lights, but nobody heard what the voice said. And the voice said, "Why are you persecuting me?" And he said, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm Jesus. I'm the Lord." Saul becomes radically saved. He becomes a radical conversion for Jesus in spreading the gospel. This man, Paul, then goes on to write 2/3 of the New Testament gospel that you read today. 2/3 of that New Testament is written by a man who hated the Christians. What caused that conversion? That question alone stumps the New Testament scholar community for those that don't believe in Christ, because that they cannot answer that question. What changed these men was seeing the resurrected Christ. The New Testament writers didn't create the resurrection. I'm going to make a bold statement here. And that is, Christianity would be true if the Bible never existed. Because Christianity is not based on a book, it's based on an event. There were thousands of Christians living before the first words of the New Testament was ever written. Paul was a Christian before he wrote the book of Romans. Why? Because he saw the resurrected Jesus. John was a Christian before he wrote the book of John. Why? Because he saw the resurrected Christ. Seeing the resurrected Jesus is what convinced them, is what they put their faith in. That is what changed them. The New Testament writers didn't create the resurrection. The resurrection created the New Testament writers. You wouldn't even have a New Testament if Jesus didn't rise from the dead. So whether you sit here today and you believe, well, I believe there's errors in the Bible, or I believe that the Old Testament and the New Testament contradict each other, whatever the cause may be that you're struggling with, and listen, if you have those questions, come and see me. I can help answer those from historical evident points of view. But even if that is the case, even if you struggle with the validity of the Bible, guess what? That doesn't make Christianity not true. What makes Christianity true is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So in closing, we have a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, moral, powerful, personal, intelligent, creator, God. And then we have Jesus, who when he walked out of that tomb, he showed that he was the God who created this world. At the end of the day, there's only two things you need to prove that Christianity is true, and that is, one, there is a God, and number two, Jesus really did rise from the dead. Mark it down, Christianity is true. So my question for you today is what will you do with that evidence? If you're a believer, you can say, well, that's great. That affirms what I believe. That helps me to share the gospel in a better way. But if you're sitting here today and you have doubts and you have questions and you have been struggling with the belief, I've presented you with evidence that you now have to choose. If this Christianity is true, what does that mean for my life? See, because there's a God who wants to know you. He wants a personal relationship with you. He created you, this whole entire universe, everything for a purpose, a reason, and a plan. The enemy has lied to you and said that following God and Christianity, oh, that's boring. You have to give up your whole life. Trust me, God made you with all your desires and the way he created you for a purpose. You're not here for no purpose without a cause. You were created intentionally. And God wants you to have a relationship with him. If I can have the lights down for a moment, please.